This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good morning. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour every Saturday between 7 and 8 a.m. on AM 970 The Apple, Talking New York. I am your host of the program, Chris Plunkett. The program is about disasters and emergencies and the things that happen in everybody's lives. And now that it's the show has taken on some new directions, it's not only domestic or regional, now it's further continental United States and also outside our borders. We've got some contact with some really fascinating people in the last couple of months, which leads me right into LP and BP. Last week's show, you heard we Skyped them in that Tuesday, BP that Tuesday, and LP was released with a little help help from many parties. But I will tell you that they're both safe. They're out of the country. Spent a little time in Miami. I picked them up at the airport last Sunday night, because it is just about a week ago, and went out and had dinner and, just kind of decompressing and, trying to get some of that good American air into their lungs. Had a meal, had some laughs. I was a very fortunate guy to have met these guys 2 or 3 months ago. I had them on the show before they were famous. Now they're famous in a good way because they were doing the good things down there in Haiti, and they want to keep on doing it. They're going to return, finish what they set out to do, which is primarily part of the emergency service and 911 system down there in Haiti. It's going to take some money. They've been getting good traction regarding raising money because it's a good cause, and will take time. But these guys, that's what they're doing, and they're also got their eyes set on other parts of the world that need their help. I mean, NGOs, non-government organizations have been contacting them with their how they address and how they make things happen. They want to try to make it more of a playbook. So with that said, those guys are doing well. We'll give you the constant update. They're going to be back in the New York City area in the next couple of weeks. But let's not forget about our own little region with our second snowstorm. We got blasted again. Did a lot of shoveling again. I actually enjoy the cold and shoveling. But again, I had the same thing on the news at the last snowstorm. People trapped in their cars. Remember, we're talking about the kids. People trapped in their homes, losing power, no generators. Captain Dan from the fire department would be scolding you people if you weren't prepared for another storm. I got some phone calls. I had to go out and take a look at some roofs that collapsed, and also with some ice damming and not taking care of the gutters and things. Again, remember, I was doing international stuff, but this is domestic stuff. This is stuff that's all relative to our neighborhood, to our region, or relative to our metropolitan area. And again, in the news, they had the cars abandoning cars again. Even it was 12 to 16 inches, depending on the area that you live in. I gotta say it. I know it's about being prepared. Something for the car. You gotta get the kit. You gotta get. You can contact us. Go on the webpage. Leave a comment. We can stick you in the right direction. A couple of different guys out there that we've had on the program who make the kits that or associated with us now. Very good relationship. Moving in the positive direction. And I was thinking about with Nick Marisi, what he was talking about with the winter months, about being prepared with your vehicle. They were talking about having some possible sand or kitty litter in your car, or maybe some energy bars. These are things that are part of the kit. Just a little something in the car that, hey, if it's only two, three hours, you got a couple of little ones in the car, having some water or having an energy bar for the kids to snack on and munch on, and while your help is on its way, give us a call or go to the comments page, go to the webpage. We have a couple of guys out there who know kits, and they vary a little different. Maybe one is better than the other for you, depending where you live. It's 1-800-PREPARE.com. That's one banner, and the other banner is the Prep Room. Both dynamite companies, but get something. You gotta get something. I have it. I'm starting to put, not starting, but I have already pushed it on to some other people in the family. Ever since having the program, I didn't think about bringing anyone else into my preparedness world, but now that I see that, to inform, it's almost like a public service here. That's how I look at this, at the program, bringing in these specialists in disasters and emergencies. We're 4 weeks into this right now? into the winter months, and we already got blasted twice. So we're going to get blasted again. You know, especially up like in the Rochester, the Buffalo area, these people get like 2 or 3 feet at a time. With, you know, just like I said, 2 or 3 feet at a time, which makes me think about what's happening in the news lately in our area. I mean, there's been some serious fires. There's been a lot of big fires all around the city, Jersey, Long Island, Staten Island, cold weather. I mean, these firemen have been working some OT out there, some high profile fires, some not high profile, but just as devastating. And then they're not one family dwellings. They're jumping from house to house. Businesses are out of business. And, you know, you couple that with the cold weather, guys putting water on fires. And then, you know, with the cold weather, then eventually that water is going to freeze. You know, it's been a mess out there. And these guys are working the tail off. That's the paid departments and the volunteer guys. What we had with the snowstorms is, you know, accessibility to get to people who are calling in the 911. Needless to say, it's been extremely difficult. There's been some criticism. This show is not about pointing fingers, so we won't even go down that path. Just, you know, being prepared, having your driveway or your sidewalks cleared off. So in case something happens in your own home that you're able to, you know, if someone fell and broke their ankle, you know, and an ambulance could basically get to your house. As long as the street's plowed, they can get up into your walkway. And, you know, this morning I was emailing a buddy of mine who actually broke his ankle. You know, this is the time of year. It's really funny because the emergency room doctor was telling him they had 15 broken ankles or attributed to hanging lights and wreaths and things like that. So those are the kinds of things that you need to be prepared for. I mean, you know, God forbid you go down, you bust a foot, and you know, the ambulance can't get to you. You know, you got to hobble over a couple of feet worth of snow and little snow banks and stuff like that. So, you know, clearing that stuff off is, you know, aesthetically it's good and for safety, so no one else slips in front of your house. But also just think about, you know, God forbid someone, you have to call an ambulance. I need to get to your house. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that it, you know, that encompasses being prepared. I got some great ideas. I got some good shows coming up about preparedness. I've been thinking about different ways of being prepared. I think it's going to be interesting. I think it'd be informative. So definitely tune in. And again, you can always podcast at cppems.com is the website. Just put your email address in there if you can't catch the show, and you can listen to the show and hopefully get some tips, and I can be helpful. Before we go to the break, let me just give you a heads up. We're going to be having my new friend, new guest. He's from Iceland, Gisli Olsson. He's a director at nethope.org, and they're down in Haiti, and they're also international. He's part of a 32 NGO organization, non-government organizations, as I say, consortium, if you will, with some very high profile sponsors and foundation assistance with the Gates Foundation, HP, Cisco System, just to name a few. He's a real interesting guy. So, you know, stay with us. Let's pay some bills, as I always say, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back from station break. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. If you, like I said, you just joined us, I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Saturday at AM 970, The Apple, Talk in New York. I'm speaking with Gisli Olsson. He is from nethope.org. It is a consortium of NGOs, and this consortium he's involved in is sponsored by some recognizable names. There's HP and Cisco Systems and Microsoft and the Gates Foundation, just to name a few. And this consortium has some household names. You had the Red Cross and Save the Children and heavy hitters like that in the NGO world. Gisli, I appreciate you coming on today. How are you?
I'm fine, Chris. Thanks very much for having me.
No, my pleasure. For you, how long have you been in this game?
I've been dealing with disasters in one form or another for about 17 years now. The last 6 years I've been focusing specifically on disasters around the world.
Now, disasters, whether it's a developed country or a third world country, doesn't matter, right?
Nope, doesn't matter whether it's in the U.S. or whether it's in Indonesia or China or down in Africa. I got to deal with them all.
Right. So when you get the boots on the ground, when you're in country, why don't you give us give us a run of what transpires when you get off the plane or helicopter for that matter.
Well, when you get to the ground, usually you come to an area where everything is in chaos. Even at the airports when you arrive, it's total chaos. And when we arrived, for example, in Haiti, we were one of the first planes to arrive. Actually, I was there with the Icelandic search and rescue team as their team leader, and there were a lot of people trying to get out of the country, and we actually, when our plane left, it took about 120 people with it over to the U.S. And to Europe. You kind of try to figure out is there anybody there in charge who can actually give you a bit more information about what the situation is on the ground, and figure out, is there anybody in charge, or is it total anarchy, or where is your need? Where's the biggest need? Where should we go and work? And that's basically what we ended up doing. For example, when we arrived in Haiti, about 22 hours after the earthquake hit.
Yeah, I was talking with Katie McKenna. She's up in Canada, and she's a documentary filmmaker. So I got her take on it, and a few others, Tim Falconer from Wave Place, as well as mm-hmm. Little Paul and Big Paul. They needed somebody in charge in order to direct all the Andros in the proper direction. So there was kind of a double dipping of services. Was that your take also?
Yeah, I mean, the earthquake in Haiti was so, so devastating that you pretty much lost all facilities that the government had, and even the UN, which had a presence there before the earthquake, became dysfunctional because of the fact that they lost their the head of the UN there and the deputy head of the UN both lost their lives in the earthquake, and that kind of destruction affects how much the capacity in country can actually do. Then on top of that, what you have is that, if you go back, let's say 10 years, the only ones responding, from the international community would have been a few UN agencies and the Red Cross, and maybe a couple of the big names in international NGOs. But nowadays, when something happened, and especially if it's just less than an hour's flight from the U.S., you have hundreds, if not thousands, of NGOs and people show up. And just to give you a comparison, when the tsunami hit in Indonesia back in 2004. 6 weeks into the disaster, they had 600 organizations working there. So that was UN, that was Red Cross, that was NGOs, 600 organizations. Within 3 days, or four, sorry, 5 days of the earthquake in Haiti, you had 800 organizations. And now you have 3,000 to 4,000 organizations working there. And trying to coordinate all of that is a bit difficult.
Does the UN, are they kind of the mediator of this, or should they be? What do you think?
Traditionally, they've had the role of coordinating what the international community is doing. Of course, it's always local government in the country that is affected. That since it is a sovereign state, they are the ones who are in charge of the overall response. But the UN is supposed to be coordinating, all the international actors that are coming in, and they try their best. But what we're looking at very much now lately is trying to figure out whether the coordination mechanisms that have been in place You know, how do you scale them out to that, you know, explosion in the number of NGOs and in the number of actors that get now involved in disaster response?
If you just joined us, this is Chris Plunkett. Today, my guest is Gisli. In an Icelandic tradition, they only use the first name in introductions. Is that correct?
That's so, correct.
And we're talking, Gisli, about NGOs worldwide. He's a consortium. He's part of a consortium of over 32 largest NGOs in the world. You know, it's funny what you were just saying. Not funny, but the parallels there is like Captain Dan and Chief for Georgia, some of my past guests on my show. They are captains and fire and chiefs in fire departments in the Bergen County area here in the metropolitan New York City, New Jersey area. And it's the same thing. If there's a fire in a particular town, that chief is ahead of it. Of coordinating all the services, even if the counties come in or if the state steps in, he's still the person in charge. So it is even on a large scale. So it's the hosting country, if you will, of that disaster. Unfortunately, you had one. He would pretty much coordinate from there. So that's what you're telling me with an NGO like that.
Yeah, I mean, in the international community, that's the way it is. But of course, what you have is you have governments in certain countries are stronger than in others. And in you know, for example, I went to the earthquake in West Sumatra in Indonesia just over a year and a half ago. And in Indonesia, they have a very strong system for their civil defense or, you know, disaster management agency. So we were much more supporting them rather than running the shows, you know, which was more the fact down in Haiti was that the UN was running the show and the government simply didn't have the capacity to handle things themselves.
Yeah. So I guess you this is our first conversation together and you hit it right in the head about what this show is about being prepared. So you're saying in Sumatra, they had their act together.
Definitely.
Yeah. You showed up together. So, 'cause there's the drilling, there's the preparedness, there's getting the citizens aware of what needs to be done. And that's what the show is about. Small scale could be a little municipality like the town I live in, or then it scales up to New York City, and then now you're talking internationally. Gates, we're gonna go to a break, and when we get back, we're gonna pick up with actually your specialties with regarding the SNRs, little search and rescues, and the infrastructure with computers and things like that. So let's go to a break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, we're back from that station break. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. If you just joined us, I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Today's guest is Gisli. He's from Iceland, and he is part of a consortium of 32 largest NGOs worldwide, include some of your better known names such as the Red Cross and Save the Children. So, Gies, tell me about what are the primary important factors you like or you need to make it successful. What's important for you?
Well, one of the key things that we need is correct information and information that we can actually act upon. There's quite interesting when you get into a disaster zone is that, first of all, you have a total lack of information in the sense that you aren't finding the right information that you need to be able to make the decisions you need to make about what you're going to do. But at the same time, now, especially with media and with the internet, you know, you're getting over flooded with lots of reports coming over Twitter, Facebook, and so on. And, you know, you need to balance those two extremes of not knowing what the right information is and this overflow of information that we have.
You said you were down there, 22 hours after the earthquake. What was job one?
Job one was actually to find transportation because you know, even though we flew in on a nice big 757, that doesn't fit a truck. So first step was to get trucks. Second step was to get gasoline because that's the thing you aren't allowed to transport on airplanes.
Right.
And then we basically split up into two. One half of our team went into putting up a base at the airport, and the other half went into working in a in a supermarket that had collapsed. So again, information, we were lucky that we met the deputy head of civil protection in Haiti at the airport when we arrived. And number one, he was able to get us the trucks for our team. But number two, he was able to tell us where there were a few sites that we could direct not only our team to, but also some of the other incoming teams that were arriving, that a lot of people were trapped underneath, a single building, basically.
So when you hit the ground, was there a heads up by them already saying that you're going to be in country in X amount of hours, or you hit the ground, you popped out of the plane and say, you know, we're here to help. We need X, Y, and Z. Was that how it worked out?
Well, one of the big problems that everybody had with regards to Haiti was that nobody could actually reach anybody in Haiti. And so it was very difficult to get information about whether the airport was actually open, whether we could actually land there, and to get information about the fact that we were actually on our way. We were lucky enough that one of the consulate generals in the U.S. For Haiti accepted our offer of assistance, because that's another thing in the international community. You can't just show up if you're representing a government, because if we would have come to Haiti without having an acceptance of our offer of assistance, that's basically like showing up with and invading them.
Right.
So you have to take care of the diplomatic parts as well. And luckily, the consulate general in Miami was willing to say, yes, please send your team so we could arrive. But when we arrived, no, they had no knowledge about the fact that we were coming. They were just hoping a lot of teams were coming, because there were a lot of work to be done there.
That raises an important issue. Here you are to help. But, it's their country. They had this disaster. You're here to help. But there are personalities and protocols. And so I would imagine that eats up some time, even though you have hundreds of thousands of people, unfortunately, that have perished. You still need to do the diplomatic channels.
Yeah, I mean, and for us, I would say that maybe that cost us 30 minutes, because what happens when we get an information that a huge earthquake like this one has occurred, it takes some time to get our team ready, to find a plane, to load the plane, to fly all the way to the affected country. And, while we were doing that, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Iceland was doing a superb job of calling pretty much every single Haitian embassy around the world and every single consulate general, until they finally reached someone who was, could answer them and said, yes, I formally accept your offer of assistance. So it's all happening parallel, this part of the equation. So I wouldn't say that it delayed us very much.
So you're down, you're in country, now you want to execute your plan. What is that plan?
The plan is basically to try to rescue as many people alive out of the rubble in as short a time as possible. You actually end up having to make some difficult decisions, because what you try to aim for is you try to find large buildings where a lot of people were trapped, because there is a likelihood of maybe rescuing three or four people. Whereas if you go to a place where only one person was trapped, the time it takes to rescue that person, you could have saved three or four. And it's a race against the clock. And, as I said, you have to make difficult decisions about prioritizing, one assignment ahead of another. But at the same time, for us, we were very much communicating back with the teams that were still en route that they were needed. And when we got reports of things, we were sharing that with the rest of the team. So luckily for us, there is a there is a very strong network amongst the international urban search and rescue teams that we all communicate very closely with each other during these kind of times. So we are making sure that all that critical information is being shared.
You just mentioned about the SNRs, the international SNR rescue teams, search and rescue teams from different countries. Do you collaborate and do drilling and training once a year, every couple of years?
Yeah, actually, about 20 years ago, these international search and rescue teams started collaborating under an umbrella called INSERAC, or the International Search and Rescue Advisory Group, which the UN runs for us. And it is a very tight-knit community, so to speak, and we know each other very well from doing exercises together, from doing meetings together. We've put out standards for what it means to be an urban search and rescue team in the international arena, and we actually do classification exercises where each team is classified as an approved urban search and rescue team. So very much, you know, building up that kind of community means that once you land on the ground and you see someone you know, you know that you can trust them, you know you can trust each other, and you know what the capacity of each other's team is. So that is extremely valuable for this kind of work. And I think, you know, you see the same thing happening, you know, within the U.S. You have these, you know, rescue teams within the various fire departments. But then when something big like 9/11 happened, you know, they were brought together, and they, because they knew each other, they knew who to trust and, you know, how each other work and so on. And that is just, you know, way beyond anything else in the scale of what's valuable when you go into the field.
Basically, these SNR teams it's an all-star team from around the planet, basically, hitting the ground. Everybody's got their own discipline, and they have their team within that discipline, and you move forward. And again, so I guess because time is of the essence, you know, times are saving lives, and that's how you address a situation down there.
Exactly.
We're gonna go to a break in a couple seconds. When we get back, after, you know, I know you're part of the SNR, but I saw some of the other things that you guys are doing. Let's touch on some of those things also. Some of the after disaster work that you guys do. Be right back. Thanks.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company with 20 years' experience in emergency management and restoration. Our seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition. Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next? Fire, smoke, water, or mold? CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. We've got answers. For more information, visit us on the web at www.cppems.com or give us a call at 201-483-8953. That's 201-483-8953. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Your host, Chris Plunkett, every Saturday at AM 970, The Apple, at Talk in New York. The show's getting some good traction. The show has taken on a new life of its own with going with international disasters as opposed to just the domestic stuff here, or even the smaller part of the municipalities are just located in the New York City area and Connecticut, Westchester. My guest today is Gisli Olsen. He's part of a consortium of NGOs that are internationally known. Got some large sponsors, but also got some household names with the Red Cross and Save the Children. Just to name a few. We were talking about the SNR work that Gisli was doing down in Haiti. Now after that, I know you have another part of your organization, and that is into the infrastructure of IT work. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what NetHope is all about. And what we did after the earthquake was to actually utilize Wi-Fi technology similar to what you have in your homes, except we used a bit more advanced antennas to connect together all the NGO offices in Port au Prince through that network to provide them with internet connectivity at a much lower cost than normally you would have to do through satellite. Both through the NGOs that are part of the NetHope Consortium, but also a few others have been utilizing this network to get connections to not only their offices, but also to some of the health clinics and schools and other things like that. Now we're also trying to make sure that we can continue this down there by doing an internship programs for IT or computer science students down there to start working for NGOs or for government or private sector down there by helping them get a little bit more IT education on top of their university degrees, and also help them get placements within those organizations.
And I've talked about this before. You know, the world is so small, and you do a lot of traveling. You've seen a lot of things, been to a lot of countries. Educating the future Haitians is part of the world economic pizza pie. You know, letting countries die in the vine is not economically responsible for one thing, and then there could be unrest and issues within the country, and like you have in some of the other third world countries, who are not advanced in technology and education. So, with that said, I know you're always on the move. There's natural disasters and man-made disasters, unfortunately, more in the news nowadays. So where are you off to?
I'm heading off to Pakistan. I'm going to be doing a study on the use of ICT in the floods that were started there last fall, but they're actually still dealing with those floods. And these were floods that affected 22 million people. So, that's probably one of the larger disasters when it comes to the number of people affected in the last few decades. So it's going to be interesting to see how technology was used and try to draw some lessons learned from that we can then take into future disasters.
Pakistan's in the media. I mean, we're dealing with Pakistan. They have this major governmental issues over there. Now, hitting the ground over there with a war right on the other side of the border, and obviously speculations of a war happening with inside Pakistan with the Taliban. Again, I'm not going to go political because that's not what the show's about. How do you navigate doing your job there while there's a war going on?
Well, like everywhere you go, no matter where it is in the world, you simply, take caution and try not to stand out too much and just do your job and be friendly. And, I've grown a little beard so that I will fit more into the local population.
And we'll get that beard up on the website so people can see, put a face to the voice. Have you dealt with anything with a very strong ally of the United States, I should say, Australia and their flooding? Have you gotten some intel on that?
No, I haven't, but I do have some friends who from the search and rescue community who are actively involved down there, and that's another big flood that we seem to be dealing with a lot of those lately. A lot more weather-related disasters than we used to have.
You know, a friend of mine told me I had bought a new car about 7 or 8 months ago, and then I realized there was a lot of the same car on the road. And he said, well, you're just aware of it now. It was always there before. I'm in the disaster business with fires and floods and structural issues and property management stuff. But seems that be that there's more disasters happening out there.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is that the especially the climate related ones, you're seeing stronger variations in climate. So you're getting, more flooding than you did before. You may be getting stronger winds in the hurricanes and so on. You can argue the politics of whether that is global warming or simply some cyclical change in the weather patterns that we also see often. But there definitely is an increase in climate-related disasters. But I think from the earthquake perspective, we're probably just hearing more of them than we used to previously.
Yeah. It was a great conversation. I'm glad that you and I met again. It's the social media of Twitter and Facebook. It's really been great for me, and it's made me meet some great people. Gaislin, why don't we just give all the contact information, the foundation, anything that people can check you out and see if they can be of assistance in any manner. Why don't you give all that information for our listeners?
Sure. So NetHope is nethope.org. I'm on Twitter, and it's Gisli, Gisli. And then I have my first letter of my last name, Gisli O.
Okay. I'd like to talk to you next month if you can Skype into me.
Sure.
Give me an update on what's happening on the other side of the planet. So again, it was a pleasure having you on the show. If, like I said, I'll talk to you next month, and good luck getting out there, and be safe. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Chris.
Take care. But remember, there's everybody's got different disasters. You know, it doesn't have to be an earthquake. It doesn't have to be a tsunami or tornadoes. And we've experienced some crazy stuff in the last 6 months, especially since I've been on the program, since I've been having the show. A lot of crazy stuff has been happening worldwide and locally. But I don't want anybody to think because there's the program that your disasters are any less important in my world. I'm available, either comments page, you want to ask me a question, or if you need work done. Listen, when a disaster happens, you're generally not saying, okay, you should be, after all this time I've been me doing this show, you should be calling your broker after the fire department leaves, or the city, depending on if you live in a public housing or assisted living or so on and so forth, whatever type of dwelling, and also the business. You know, business, you need to generate dollars, you need to be back in business, and especially if you don't have the proper coverage to be out of business at any length of time. So again, that's, I'm in business to help you out. That's cppems.com. If you need to go to the website. Next week, we're going to have Bart Terulli. He was a guest a month and change ago. On the financial end of it, remember I was telling you about disasters come in different forms nowadays. It's just not about property and calamity. It's monetarily. It's health. So Bart's got some new stuff he wants to talk about to head off future disasters in the financial world for you. Whatever, you know, again, if it's just a question being asked and answered by him on the comments page, that's great. Another show down. Another successful week. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Saturday at AM 970 the app between 7 and 8. Well, it looks like we're going to be getting a new time slot, but I'll give you some, keep you abreast of that in the future. All right, so enjoy the rest of the weekend, and let's not forget about the war. Let's end this thing. Let's bring home our troops. God bless our country, and take care.
You've been listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Saturday morning at 7 for the Disaster Recovery Hour, right here on AM 970, The Apple.